follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. This is Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
Till 11 o'clock today, White Sox baseball on at noon. I'll have your pregame show. Connor McKnight will be on the call with Darren Jackson. And then Jesse Rogers will have your postgame show of the White Sox today. Brian, back fresh from his European tour. I chuckled, Brian, when you mentioned all the walking you did in Paris, because I went to Paris with my wife a little over 10 years ago. I think it was 2012 when we were there. And I kid you not, we walked well over 10 miles a day.
Oh, absolutely.
Because my wife was afraid to ever hop on the public transportation, fearing that we would get lost, since neither of us spoke French. And this was still back in 2012, where even though smartphones were around, they weren't quite as smart. You couldn't rely on them to do everything quite the way you can now. So we walked well over 10 miles a day. I'll never forget by day three, Brian, I was like, this is insane. My quads hurt so much. I don't know if I can continue on. It was brutal. Brutal.
Well, in Positano, my smartphone told me one day I walked 6 miles and 66 floors because I was staying way at the top of the town. But yeah, it's a great – Paris, great walking. And Rome, too, great walking city. I mean, and so – I did, you know, utilize the subway in both cities at times, but mostly it was great walking, even if it was raining a little bit.
So, and I do want to get after too, because while you were gone, the Blackhawks, it was the last Sunday show that we did before you left.
Yeah.
I talked about how the NHL draft lottery was occurring that next Monday and how it could be potentially a franchise altering lotto for the Blackhawks. And sure enough, things came up their way. So I do want to get your reaction to that. But before we do that, have to share some Chris Sims, who was critical of Justin Fields. I believe he ranked him 23rd amongst his NFL quarterbacks. He does this list every year. And so your reaction was, I think, a lot of Bears fans' reactions when they heard that Chris Sims was not putting him at least in the top 20. So here's a little bit of Chris Sims explaining what the issue is with Justin Fields.
Greek God, we got that. Insane runner, like insane, like where you go, it's insane enough to, when you put him up there with some of the better receivers and running backs in football, you go, it's as dangerous as some of those guys in the open field. But his throwing is a collection of great plays with no consistency. In fact, his overall quarterback game is that, and that's where he's 23 for me.
All right, a little more from Sims.
You look at some of the games where he had good stats and good runs, and you go, ooh, ooh, but they lost. And he still made a number of, you know, mistakes or bad throws in those games to where I can't buy into it yet. I got to see a little bit more before I can start to say, oh, he's ready to take over the world here or do something special. Again, with all that and the highlight plays and all that we're talking, we're still talking about way below average consistency and surgicality throwing in the football game, throwing in the throwing game, right? You know, it's all those highlights and everything else. They broke out the Wildcat offense and did everything like that. It translated in one win, right? And that's where you get into it and you see that. You start to go, wait. You know, hey, this is awesome when you play it on ESPN or NBC Sports highlights. Yeah, these are cool to watch. But then you start to break down the game and you go, oh, man, he missed this throw. Ooh, or he should have thrown it and didn't throw it.
My Detroit Lions game last year.
Right, exactly
one
right.
One of the craziest runs that we saw in the NFL last
craziest
year.
Craziest runs ever, but also threw a pick six and mixed some like wide open people in some big moments, right, if I remember correctly in that game. It's not a game I went back and watched film for this specific exercise there. But yeah, and with this throwing, to get back to that, it's still too elbowy.
So Chris Sims with a lot of criticism there and the lack of consistency from Justin Fields. And I'll be honest.
Elbowy?
Yeah, he went on to explain that even further.
What was the other one that he made up? Surgicality?
Yeah, surgicality.
Okay.
All right, so clearly Brian is not necessarily putting all the stock in Chris Sims, but what I will say is that he does watch the tape. He is somebody who's played the position, and I think his criticism is fair. The Justin Fields is full of highlight ability, something that you watch, and if you're watching it in chunk form, it's jaw-dropping at times, right? But there, I think it's a fair criticism to say, in order to be one of the top 20 quarterbacks in this league, there needs to be more consistency from him. And I don't think that's false.
No, it's not. And those, there are legitimate criticisms of Justin Fields, and we make them on a weekly basis throughout the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's great that he can escape a rush, and he can have, you know, a peel off a 25-yard run, either by design or just because he's feeling, you know, he's fearing for his life. And the passing, the numbers are the numbers. He is the worst-rated passer among NFL starting quarterbacks. Now, you know, the debate immediately is, well, what's around him? And hopefully, Ryan Poles has appreciably improved the roster, and you can get a better handle on Justin Fields. But you have to do it this year anyway, right? I mean, you don't have the luxury of time. Either you're picking up the option year on his contract, or you're moving on. And so that's all going to come into play. And I will give Chris Sims this. He has made quite a name for himself and a nice little cottage industry, because for a guy who played the position, but not necessarily at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if his dad wasn't who his dad is. And then if his last name was different, maybe he doesn't get the attention. But if you do a Google search on Chris Sims right now, every city in the NFL market, every market is saying, why does Chris Sims have Tua rated this way in Miami?
Yep.
You know, in Denver. So God bless Chris. He has become a go-to guy. He's out there, and he's watching the tape, as you said. And some of the criticisms are spot on, but I it's not like Joe Theismann's breaking this down, okay? I mean, it's Chris Sims.
So, I mean, but the truth is that all of his criticism, like for people who get mad about it, I think that, like, what you just said is true. Ryan Poles has set himself up in a situation where, if you really look at where they're at and what they've done, they have the ejection button here where that they can push next offseason, which makes sense. It's well done by Ryan Poles, right? You've surrounded Justin Fields with DJ Moore. You've added, you know, Deontay Foreman as a running back. You drafted Tyler Scott. You've got more weapons around him. You traded for Chase Claypool. We'll see how that works out.
Well, but Justin says he's got a new attitude and everything's working out well, and here's hoping. But, yeah, Ryan Poles, I mean, and then God bless Lovie in Houston, gave him a gift wrap number one pick that you put you in a position to do either put more around Justin next year or say goodbye to Justin.
You reference Fields. Here's Fields on Chase Claypool.
I do, because him second time going around. He knows
that's Eberflus. I thought I had Justin. Sorry, I am dealing with a sun issue here in the old National Bank studio, Brian. I'm not going to lie. I thought I had my screen, but to quote Gary Bettman,
sunshine has always been our enemy.
In the studio here, when you're dealing with the sun in your face and you're trying to read the prompter, it doesn't always work out well, so I apologize for that.
Sunshine has always been our enemy.
That was Eberflus talking about Chase Claypool being a little bit more comfortable in the offense.
I do, because him second time going around, he knows the formations and the motions and knows the route disciplines. He's learning that as we go. And you can certainly see him get more comfortable with Justin, too.
All right. He knows the formations now, so that's good.
That's a start.
It is so funny. You're right. Chris Sims he's done a great job of knowing what buttons to push to irritate almost the entire fan base across the NFL. He is one of the most hated men when it comes to analysis. But like I said, the criticism is fair here. I need him to unveil the rest of the list to see who's above Justin Fields before I can actually determine whether or not I want to quibble with how he has them ranked. Now, I will point out, last year, he had Justin Fields 23rd on his list. 22nd was Zach Wilson, so that didn't work out quite so well.
No.
He has not unveiled Zach Wilson just yet. My guess is that Zach Wilson did not make the top 40 this year, Bri.
No, so, I would hope not, yeah.
It's all fair criticism. Justin Fields, if he's going to lead the Bears to great things, and if he's going to be the quarterback past next season. I think he needs to show a command of Luke Getsy's offense where he can continue to move the sticks. I don't know if I played it because there's a lot of Chris Sims breakdown here, but one of his criticisms was that he doesn't always see the player who's open, who's NFL open, right?
Right.
He either doesn't recognize it or he doesn't want to make the throw because he doesn't trust his accuracy as a thrower, and so he doesn't feel comfortable making those throws. And I think that's the fair criticism when you really drill down, is if Justin Fields is going to be a franchise quarterback in this league, he needs to do that more often.
Yeah, we see the wow plays. We see him put the ball where it needs to be on long passes and you know, put exactly where his receiver is going to get it. Not nearly enough consistently, right? Mm-hmm. And so, fair or not, this is make or break year for Justin Fields and for the Bears' evaluation of him. And that's all legitimate. And no one's going to sit here and say they know for a fact that Justin Fields is a franchise quarterback. If they are, they're lying. And no one can tell you he's a complete buster either, because if they believe that to be the case, they don't know. They're lying. It's just the jury is firmly out on Justin Fields. And he's going to have 17 games and maybe a postseason, given that the division's open. I mean, here's hoping. But that's it. I mean, you're going to have to make a decision. You can't go past this year when you have the possibility of drafting high up and getting your quarterback, the one you didn't inherit, if you feel that's the route to go. Or you say he's exactly who the previous regime believed him to be when they drafted him, and he's getting better each year, and we can move on.
And if I look at it, like, think about consistency, the all-time greatest, the GOAT, Tom Brady. If you try and think back through his career highlights, there's not too often, Brian, when you'll really think about a play that wowed you. For, you know, to steal from Chris Sims, it was the surgicality, Bri.
That's it. Surgicality is big in my world.
That Tom Brady had that made him the best of all time, right? It was, he knew where to go with the ball pre-snap, and when a guy was open, he would deliver the ball right where it needed to be to optimize the yards after the catch for those players. And it's not that he couldn't make some great throws, but if you think about Tom Brady's career, it's not the wow plays. And even it's Peyton Manning as well, right? Like, it's the ability to know where the ball needs to go, to read the defense pre-snap, get it to the open receiver, and let them make plays. Those are two of the greatest of all time, right? And certainly Justin Fields has so much more if he ever could reach a height where he could read a defense like Tom Brady or Peyton Manning. His physical ability to run with the ball would make him the best of all time if he could process a defense prior to the snap the way that those guys can. I don't think he'll ever reach that height, but that's not a knock on him.
No, right. Very few can. And, you know, that is you're blessed with that football IQ. I don't know how much tape you can watch to improve that. It's instinct. It's experience. I mean, go back, Peyton Manning, how many interceptions did he throw his first year or two?
Yeah, like 28 or so.
Yeah, right? So, and then he started saying Omaha and everything was fine. The ceiling for Justin Fields at this point is very high, but it's up to him now and Luke Getsy and the front office still. But, I mean, their work is pretty much done at this point to, you know, get the best out of him that they can, and 17 games from now, decide whether he's the guy or not. And maybe it's not enough body of evidence to do it, but that's what you're working with.
312-332-3776 if you want to chime in, react to Chris Sims being a little bit critical of Justin Fields, but I think for the most part fair criticism. Or if you'd like to talk about the Bears voluntary minicamp, we haven't dove into the fact that Jalen Johnson was not in attendance this past week. We'll get into that next here on ESPN 1000.
Listen to us now, live on the ESPN Chicago app. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
J. Jeff Miller, Brian Hanley with you till 11 o'clock today here on ESPN 1000, talking some Bears, a little bit of baseball as well. I do want to pick Brian's brain about his reaction to the Hawks winning the Connor Bedard lottery before we get out of here, but let's take a couple calls here first. Mike is in the South Shore. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing this morning?
Doing well. What's up with you?
That's good. Doing pretty good. I think the assessment of Chris Sims, there was no balance. I think that I get what he's saying. He's going off of last year, but he could have at least said, yeah, you know what? He's got to work on this, but I saw some flashes. Prime example, the things he need to work on. Remember the 2-minute drills of games where the games were close, and he threw some picks in those situations because of a misread or an overthrow. But he showed flashes. He put the ball, I think it was the Dolphins game, where he put the ball in the court of the receiver's hands and he dropped it. That's not on Justin. Justin did his job, but unfortunately the receiver didn't. You know, say that he has flashes, and then the Bears have done a great job of putting the pieces around him. So Chris should have added that, and that would have been a little bit more better. I can see where fans can get frustrated because I feel Justin can get the job done. He just needs the weapons. And I like you guys' point about, I think when you talked about Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, them be able to read things before it happens, I think this year I want to see, does the game in his mind slow down where he, like you said, he sees it before it happens, mm-hmm. and he puts the ball there. That's key for Justin this year. He's got to be able to do that because Justin is a great leader in that locker room, and he does have the skill sets. It's about bringing it together. And again, like I told my buddy yesterday, we can talk about this all we want. If that damn offensive line does not do their job, we're going back to square one. It is imperative the offensive line get out the gates fast in protecting, in pass blocking, and running. So we can see is Justin finally developing the way we know we can.
You're right. No, you're right, Mike. Thanks for the call. Appreciate the points there. I'll be honest, Bri. I'm under the assumption that the offensive line will be much better this year because of the resources they invested. Now, that may not ultimately be the case, but Mike's right. Like, if Darnell Wright's and, you know, if they don't, we're probably going to see Cody White here at center, I would imagine, because that's where he was working in the mini camp earlier this week. You know, they've invested a lot of money in trying to fix the offensive line. And don't forget, they signed Nate Davis as well. So if it's not improved, that would be it would be completely surprising to me. And in some ways, if it's not an indictment of Ryan Poles, if they don't improve this offensive line this year.
Yeah, but it's also relative. They can improve. And still not good enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can make a huge leap from where they were last year and should because, as you just said, the assets they've invested. But how that comes together and how they settle in on five as soon as, you know, as quickly as they can and hopefully health, you know, plays to their advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they made a great improvement, would they be a middle of the pack offensive line? You'd still have a better handle on what Justin's all about if you had an average offensive line, right? I don't expect them to be a sieve, right? I don't expect them to be an elite offensive line, even with the improvements, but here's hoping they surprise us. But you know, if they just got to the middle of the pack and it looks serviceable, then you've got a better handle on what you're looking at the quarterback.
Let's try Ben, who's in Fort Wayne, wants to talk some Bears. What's up, Ben? You're on with Miller and Hanley.
Hey, fellas, thanks for taking my call. Just a couple of observations. As far as Chris Sims' comments and, you know, statements, I understand what he's saying, and I get it. But for me, mm-hmm. because he wasn't no world beater or wasn't no hell of a guy when he played the game, I just receive it better coming from somebody that I could receive it if it was coming from a quarterback that did more.
You need a Hall of Famer, Ben. You need someone like Kurt Warner telling you what's going down.
You know, exactly. You know, I mean, because who the hell is Chris Sims in the NFL? And secondly, I just wanted to give a shout-out to all the fallen military families.
God bless.
And first response. Y'all have a blessed day.
Great. Great note there, Ben. Happy Memorial Day to all. But yeah, remember all those who served and lost their life, because obviously that is what the day is for. I can't get on Chris Sims because he wasn't, you know, a Hall of Famer, Bri. Like, there's legitimate, he does the work. And there's plenty of people out there who will offer up opinions who I don't always, you know, I suspect don't do nearly as much work as Chris Sims does. And, you know, I think if you can separate yourself from being a fan and see what he's saying, we need what Chris Sims is saying to, what he's saying Justin Fields needs to get better at as Bears fans, he's right. Because if Justin Fields doesn't do that better, then the Bears will be moving on next year. And some folks will be very mad at Ryan Poles if he has to make that decision because he's not sold on Justin Fields as a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, whether Chris Sims has gravitas or not, it's debatable. But he does put in the work. He puts himself out there. Nothing like a list to get people talking.
Oh, yeah.
Good or bad, or, you know, you're going to get a reaction. So he knows how to package it. He knows how to promote himself. He knows how to be, separate himself from the pack of analysts. So kudos to him for all that. And look, there have been plenty of journeyman players named the sport who either turned into great analysts or great managers or GMs or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't necessarily show it when they were actually in uniform, but that doesn't mean they didn't understand the game. And so I'm not dismissing him out of hand, but it's just, he's spot on with some of his observations. And I think our first caller was a Mike. I think those are legitimate points that you just put a little more balance in there and put it in a little bit more perspective, right? But what was he working with and what wasn't he working with? And he did have wow moments. I mean, there were a few weeks there that you got two or three wow plays a game.
No doubt about it. Let's try Owen, who's in Willowbrook. Owen wants to talk a little bit of White Sox baseball. What's going on, Owen?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I know you're talking embarrassed, but earlier in the day when you're talking, or morning when you're talking about the Sox, here's what the Sox have done over the last week in regards to scoring runs. 0 runs, loss, 4 runs, win, 6 runs, win, 2 runs, loss, 12 runs, win, 3 runs, loss. This offense is too inconsistent. They've done nothing to address it. Now, they've got guys coming back from the bullpen that I think is going to bolster their bullpen. And if they're going to do something, I don't know why Han is sitting on his hands and waiting till the trade deadline, because the division is weak and can still be had. And it sounds crazy, but Madrigal is expendable with the Cubs. We got a second baseman in Romy Gonzalez hitting 197. He's hitting 197. Well, you laugh, but Madrigal, when the Sox went to the playoffs, before he got hurt that first half season, was getting on base 2 or 3 times a game and scoring because Abreu was driving him in.
Yeah.
They have nobody that gets on base. You got a shortstop hitting 254 as our leadoff guy. Vaughn is hitting 234, and his best spot with the Sox when he was hitting was when he was batting second. I know that Benedetti was a group. I'll give Han credit. He got Benedetti. I think he should flip-flop the two of them, because Vaughn will wait a little bit more in the two-hole and maybe drive the ball to right.
All right.
I really think they have to make a move. When you got a backup catcher at 151, you have to go out and get a guy who's going to get on base for these guys to drive. And then you got Jimenez back, and you got nothing but DHs on the team.
I hear you, Owen. I'm going to let you go on, because we've got quite a few people who want to chime in as well. But the one thing I'll say is, like, he mentioned Eloy Jimenez, Bri. Eloy Jimenez is back in the lineup today. He's going to be playing right field. So get him right back into the lineup. He'll be hitting second today behind Tim Anderson. You're right. The lineup has been inconsistent. I do think, you know, people get sick of hearing it. But without Eloy, it's going to be a struggle, right? I'll be curious to see what actually happens once, assuming Eloy can stay out there regularly. Will he be playing more right field? You know, Jake Berger, you want him in the lineup. Obviously, Gavin Sheets against righties, you saw yesterday, he can be valuable in those situations. So, yeah, we all know that what the problem is for the White Sox. They've got a lot of players who, for the most part, you'd like to see as designated hitters. What can they do? Can they make it work? Will they actually entertain the notion of putting Jake Berger at second base from time to time when they need some runs? That's something that we're going to see over the next couple weeks play out.
Well, and I'll just throw this out there. I think you'd be surprised at what you would receive in return in terms of offers for Tim Anderson. Winning or losing, when you get closer to the trade deadline, if you even entertain that notion, and I'm sure they're probably not, you might not be overwhelmed with what you would get in return for the man who everyone is quick to point out the record when he's in the lineup and when he's not available. So Owen just pointed out the 254, and that's supposedly your best guy. All right, help.
Yeah, he's been a little better as of late the last few games.
Yeah, he had a four-hit game the other day. I get it.
He talked about, finally, I know Stoney and Benetti did a really good job of breaking down his leg kick in a game in Cleveland, how he's making an adjustment. He seemed to be off since his return from his injury. So he's been better as of late. We'll see what happens. The White Sox are going to have some interesting decisions to make as the trade deadline approaches, especially if the American League Central continues to be woeful, right? And they play just a little bit better baseball. If they're 2, 3, 4 games out, what will they do? Jeff Passan was on the station earlier this week saying that if they were honest with themselves, it might be, white flag trade part due. It might be the best option for the White Sox, but do they really have the appetite for that? That is the question, right? I don't think you can go out and just make a trade and pick up a backup catcher on, May 28th. Like, it's tough in baseball to find anybody who's going to move the needle for you because most teams don't want to make trades until you get later into June, early
July. Especially
with
an expanded playoff format,
yes,
too.
Yes, yeah. So that's the hard part that Rick Hahn is dealing with, is trying to find a trading partner. 312-332-3776. Again, we taking your calls here as we lead you up to White Sox pregame coverage, which starts at 12. I do want to ask Brian, though. I keep teasing it. I want to ask Brian, what was his reaction when he learned that the Blackhawks had won the NHL lottery? And what city was he in Europe? We'll find out next here on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Jeff Miller, Brian Hanley on ESPN 1000 here till 11 o'clock and the ESPN Chicago app. All right, Bryce. So, I was just talking to Jake Cantu, our producer, during the break here. We've been focused a lot on the Celtics forcing a Game 7. Jake is born and bred in Dallas, so he's a huge Dallas Stars fan. And
He's got his playoff beard going.
He absolutely does, and he's actually flying back home to Texas tomorrow, right? And he said if everything goes according to plan, he'll be in attendance for Game 6, right? Right, Jake?
Yes, sir. Tomorrow night.
Dallas, Vegas.
Repping the green, so...
So
fingers
a caller
crossed.
Earlier in the show, Ryan is sitting in the exact same spot, to get the Celtics through because he didn't do that the first three games. So superstition is alive and well, and Jake's got his playoff beard, so he's not shaving, even though he's got a passport picture coming up. So
he's rooting on his Dallas Stars somewhere. Mike Modano is proud. All right, so Bri, you had not left for Europe yet. I got ahead of myself, but you did actually take in the Blackhawks winning the NHL draft lottery and the Connor Bedard sweepstakes that Monday that they did. What was your reaction? Where were you? How'd you take in the news?
Well, what was almost identical to when the Bulls defied the odds to get Derrick Rose, the option, the 1.8%. I was covering the Bulls at that time, and it was on my birthday that they did that. So Kyle Davidson, good luck. He should have bought a lottery ticket that day. I mean, with the luck that and the reaction of Hawks Nation, start buying season ticket packages. That's how exciting this is. He can't miss, is as close as you're going to get when you get guys in the league right now telling you that his shot right now is better than anyone else. His release and his shot. Connor McDavid sit there and tell you that he shoots it so hard and has that quick release and that it's better than most any player in the league right now at 17. I mean, God bless the Blackhawks. But speaking of Connor McDavid in Colorado, it takes more than one, right? I mean, in hockey in particular, you can have the best player and, Colorado bowed out before they were supposed to bow out yet again. So we'll see how the pressure comes with the luck. Comes pressure for Kyle Davidson to start accelerating the rebuild because you now have truly a foundation piece here.
Yeah, no, it's truly, if you look at the history of the NHL draft, the good news is that oftentimes the players who are dubbed the, you know, generational or generational type talents, I'm hard pressed to remember a time when they didn't turn out to be elite level players. You know, you're Connor McDavid, you're Sidney Crosby, and that's rarefied air, but that's the good news, right? So, and to your point about his shot, yeah, Nathan MacKinnon, because Connor Bedard has attended those elite offseason skill camps, and Nathan MacKinnon, the Colorado Avalanche captain who helped them win the Cup last year, pointed out that, yes, enter into the league and he will have the best shot already. So that is high praise coming from one of the best and hardest workers in hockey. So it's good to hear that. They have that foundational piece. And the good news is the Hawks are stacked with a lot of draft picks and a lot of, you know, young talent in the minors as well. So now that you've got that prime, whether he's going to be a center or a winger, we'll find out. But if he can, you know, solidify that center role, they have themselves a foundational piece that's the hardest thing to acquire in hockey. So you got that. You can actually start dreaming of the possibility of getting back to a time when the Hawks were involved in deep playoff runs and Chicago fans could get excited about the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, and to your point, hockey is, it's not like 50-50 in the NFL, especially offensive line, whatever. Even a high first-round pick, you're holding your breath because the odds are a little bit more than even, better than even, that they're going to be who you think they are. But in hockey, and you mentioned a couple of the guys, they usually turn out to be, if not exactly what you thought, pretty close.
I wanted to play this. I chuckled. The Florida Panthers are awaiting the winner of the Dallas Stars-Vegas Golden Knights series, game six for them tomorrow in Dallas, as we mentioned there. But the Panthers swept the Carolina Hurricanes, and they, of course, themselves came back from a 3-1 deficit against the Boston Bruins in the first round. The Boston Bruins team that had set the NHL record for most points in a season. Matthew Tkachuk was the key move for the Florida Panthers. They changed around after winning the President's Cup last year and bowing out in the playoffs early. They completely changed their franchise moving forward by going after a superstar in Matthew Tkachuk. And man, oh man, Bri, the run he was on in the Panthers sweep of the Carolina Hurricanes was ridiculous. He scored three game winners, two coming in overtime, including one in quadruple overtime. He assisted on the third game winner, and then he closed out the series with his third game winning goal of that series with 4 seconds left or whatever it was. I mean, he's been on a run here, and he's completely paying off for everything they traded. I was amused, though, when Wayne Gretzky started asking him in the post game about watching after his dad, who also is a great hockey player, Keith Tkachuk. Listen to Wayne on TNT.
Matthew, Wayne here. Congratulations. You're playing unbelievable, and more importantly, it's great for your team and great for the city, but you've had a lot of responsibility in this series. Remember, your biggest job now is to take care of your dad tonight.
Lickerdale. Yeah.
It's funny how it works that way, you know? I don't know. I'll make a deal with him. I'll take care of him tonight. All hopefully right. In a few weeks he could be taking care of me.
Good luck. You're going to have to start paying rent soon or what?
I might have to send him home for a few days before he comes back. But I know him. I know him. He's looking at the red eyes from Vegas to Miami or Vegas to Fort Lauderdale. Going to try to go back and forth. But you know what? This is a special time for myself, my family, obviously my teammates. But, everybody says it, but you know, the work that they've put in, my dad never had an opportunity to play in a Stanley Cup final. So I think he's living this through me and my family, even my brother. I know he also plays. So, to have his support is unbelievable. He's rooting so hard for me, my sister, it's great to have the family down here. It really is. And support me through this all, and I can't wait to have them down for this next round.
No, no red eyes. He's probably going to charge a PJ to your credit card while you're in this interview right now.
Yep, shocker.
Matthew Tkachuk talking about his dad, Keith Tkachuk, who I have to imagine you covered during your time with all the hockey that you covered, Bri.
Yeah, and you know, as he points out, as great a career as Keith had, he didn't get the chance to play the ultimate stage. So, you know, as Matt said, you know, his dad's living through him. Just like any other parent, they hope that their kids best them in whatever field, and to have two sons playing in the NHL.
At a very high level, both right? All-star caliber players in Matthew and Brady. And Keith Tkachuk, you know, he's in the Hall of Fame, right? I assume he had to
be in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, he's been, you know, think about that. As great career that Keith had, his son Matthew at 25 years old is just, you know, he's surpassing what Keith did. So amazing to watch the success that the Tkachuks have had. Good on Keith for raising a son.
I'm not sure the league was hoping for the finals that they're setting up.
I wouldn't think so.
No, Jake, you know, nothing, you know, close your ears, but I don't think that they were hoping for Dallas or Florida finals.
And Jake's mad at Matthew or at Keith for looking at the Vegas flights. He's like, hey, don't get ahead of yourself just yet, my friend.
I just read, too, Keith Tkachuk not in the Hall of Fame.
Wow. Oh. That's a little surprising to me. I did not realize he was not in the Hall of Fame. It's probably that bias against American hockey players.
So take that, Keith.
Right?
Take that.
312-332-3776. We will wrap it up here on ESPN 1000 here in a moment. Mellor and Hanley till 11 o'clock. But something, one of the best of all time? Something comes to an end tonight. We'll talk about it next here on ESPN 1000.
If you miss something, get the podcast on the ESPN Chicago app. This is ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
Jeff Mellor, Brian Hanley here till 11 o'clock here on ESPN 1000. White Sox try and get back to the winning ways as they close out their series in Detroit today. Dylan Cease will be on the mound up against Eduardo Rodriguez, who has been the Tigers' best pitcher this season. And the Cubs also first pitch at 1:20 at Wrigley Field. They try and avoid a sweep at the hands of the Cincinnati Reds. We shall see what comes of that. Bri, have you been a watcher of the HBO series Succession?
I have, but since I've been out of the country for a couple of weeks, I'm behind, and all the finales tonight. I will say this. I can't remember a show that I've watched recently or maybe at all where I pretty much dislike every person on the show.
Absolutely.
Seriously, right? I mean, there's not one. Usually, you know, there's somebody that you think is a decent person and you're rooting for, and yet, if you can get past that, it's been an unbelievable series, and I got past it. But you know, the first few episodes, I'm like, why am I watching this? These people are miserable.
Yeah.
And that's, you know,
they're
money.
They're vile, disgusting billionaires.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, that's, but, you know, you can take, I think, you know, some schadenfreude in the fact that so many, you know, when things go wrong for them, that's, I think, where you can derive a little bit of pleasure. But yes, they do a great job of, you know, you for whatever reason, even though they are despicable people, if you find a way to at least empathize in moments with some of what they're dealing with. All right, the show comes to a close tonight. It is the series finale. I won't ruin anything for you since you are three episodes behind. I believe my wife is two episodes behind, Bri. It's usually a show that we watch together, but
sure. She's
been falling asleep through the last couple, probably because we're starting it too late in the evening for her to just keep her eyes awake. And it is a slower moving show, a lot of dialogue, very dialogue intensive. And so if you're tired, it's a tough one to power through. But my move has been, I've watched the last couple shows without her. And I have not told her that I've done that. But when she does go back and watch, I'll watch the shows like it's new to me.
There you go.
I'll pretend like I'm seeing it for the first time. But
that's how you keep a marriage going.
But so I probably won't watch it as it's occurring tonight because she'll probably still be awake. But when she finally goes to bed tonight, that's when I'll close out and watch Succession, the finale. But I'll have to,
because you don't want a chance hearing how
exactly.
It turned out.
It will
be everywhere.
It will be spoiled for sure. So it will be impossible for me to avoid it. So I'm going to definitely watch it later tonight, but I won't be watching live. I'll probably take it in well after 11 o'clock tonight. But I did want to share this. There's a theory floating out there. I thought this was interesting. No spoilers here, but it is a theory that was posed on TikTok by somebody named Sophie, and she pointed out, I believe she works, I think she writes for the New York Times. She points out some of the importance of, and or at least the significance of names and why somebody you might not be expecting could be in line as the final successor on Succession's finale tonight.
If you watch Succession, you may have noticed that many of the names are very, very intentional. Siobhan's nickname, Shiv, can also refer to a knife, and the family surname, Roy, literally means king. Typically, TV writers use relatively common surnames for their characters. There are various reasons why they do this, and we don't have time to get into it right now. So always pay attention when there's a highly unusual surname on a TV show. In Succession, that surname, of course, is Wamsgans. Wamsgans is a very rare German surname. Gans means goose in German, and the Wams part of the surname comes from the Gothic given name Wamba, which means big paunch. Wamba also shares roots with the English word womb. Taken all together, we can interpret Wamsgans to mean goose with a big belly, pregnant goose, or most likely a goose down vest or coat, since a coat or vest would cover that part of the body. But all of this is just background information. None of it relates to who Tom is as a character. No, the real reason he was given the last name Wamsgans is because of this guy. This is Bill Wamsgans, an MLB player during the early 20th century. He is remembered for one thing, and that is completing the only unassisted triple play in World Series history. He took out three players at once in what is essentially the finale of baseball. It's no coincidence that Tom shares a surname with Bill Wamsgans, so you have to wonder if Tom will complete an unassisted triple play and take out all three of the Roy siblings to become the leader of Waystar Royco in the Succession finale.
What do you think about that? A baseball tie for you there, Brian.
Wow.
Tom Wamsgans with the surname of Wamsgans. Could he follow in the footsteps of Bill, who did complete the only triple play in World Series history to end the World Series?
See, if you're in that writer's room and when you started the series, this was all interwoven in your little mind and you put it to paper and the surnames were going to tip you off and German history and
Pull out your baseball reference, Brian.
Seriously. I mean,
I love it, though. If it comes to fruition, it was there for us the whole time. If you just know your baseball history. And listen, as two guys who know a thing or two about baseball, I'm not going to lie. I had no idea about Bill Wamsgans.
No. What year was that?
What did she say? He played through 1926. So it was clearly well before either of us were born.
I think he's in the Marquee studio postgame show. Everyone else is.
Yes. So keep an eye out for that. Obviously, Brian's going to have to catch up. I don't know, man. Are you going to be able to avoid spoilers? What are you going to do? How quickly are you going to power through the last three episodes?
Yeah, I mean, it's too nice weather to do it this afternoon.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and I got baseball. I got Dylan Cease. I mean, I just I'm going to have to go into my Aaron Rodgers dark retreat and just, over the last couple of weeks, I haven't been able to avoid theories and whatever. So I know some things I shouldn't know. And so I'm just going to have to, it is what it is. I'll just have to, try not to, don't text me at midnight tonight after you powered through the finale, unbeknownst to your wife. You tell me.
I will wait until I get the A-OK from you that you have completed the finale before I text with you any final wrap-ups. But
we can talk about it next week,
Okay, yeah. There you go. Promise me you'll be done by next Sunday.
That's absolutely.
All right, there you go.
No
That's
problem.
The plan.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do that next week. But thanks for listening, folks. We're wrapping it up here on ESPN 1000. Don't forget, we've got White Sox and Tigers coming your way. First pitch at 12:40, pregame coverage at noon. I'll be on the pregame coverage for you. Jesse Rogers will have the post. Of course, Connor McKnight will be on play-by-play with Darren Jackson. And we do have the return of Eloy Jimenez for the White Sox. He's hitting second today as he returns from his rehabilitation assignment at AA. So he will be back for the White Sox. Adam Haseley, the corresponding move. He was optioned to AAA today. And the Cubs, they will try and provide Brian with a little bit of good news.
They're just in a little rut. That's all David told me. Just in a little rut. May's been a rut.
Only a matter of time before David Ross has this team humming, Bri. Whether you like it or not.
Okay, I'll count on that.
All right. Thanks for listening, folks. We're back next Sunday, but White Sox baseball coming your way at noon. He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. Thanks to Jake Cantu as well. Talk to you later on ESPN 1000.